Okay, that should be recording.
All right, well, we are grateful that this is what you chose to do on a Friday night at 8 o'clock. Let's talk about finances and how to care for missionaries from the local church's perspective. I truly am really grateful that you're here to have this conversation. We want to make it relevant for you, and we're probably coming at it from a lot of different angles. I'm going to introduce myself and then have the next two panelists introduce themselves as well. But we would love to hear your questions. We obviously won't get to all of them. But I would just love for you, as we begin, to just turn to your neighbor, pick one person, and tell them what's one thing you'd love to hear about in this conversation today. So what's one thing that you came hoping to hear a little bit about? Go ahead and turn to your neighbor really quick, and we're going to do that just for a minute. Introduce yourself and say hello.
Hi, neighbor.
We'll just pass this down then.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll just have the three of us introduce ourselves.
Is that okay?
And then when we get to the end, one of the questions was what we can offer them. So if you want to think about anything that we can offer them, like even if it's further conversation or talking about any kind of expertise that you want to tell them about. Yeah, after the session, yeah. What's one thing you would suggest, and what's one thing that you could offer them as well? So. Okay, that probably wasn't enough time to talk very much, but we're going to get a little bit of feedback from you, and we're just going to dive into this conversation. We are a panel of three and four. We're going to ask Debbie to jump in a little bit, too. We were supposed to be a panel with another person on who wasn't able to be here because of weather in Indiana. So my name is Sarah Simons, and I am the director of The Way Between. We are a member care organization that cares for missionaries in major life transition. And my husband and I founded it during COVID. Why not? You know, like, let's start it then. We've been doing this type of work for about 15 years. We've been doing it with another organization, and we've served about 75 different organizations. We're a third-party member care organization. Missions, we've been a missionary. We just got back from Spain after 9 years of being in, almost 9 years in Spain. It's dear to my heart to talk about finances because we've lived on support as donation-based ministry workers for 16 years of our lives. And so that's the angle that I come at it from right now. We are also doing a hybrid model with the new organization that we started, in that we provide services and charge for the services. So we do a fees for service charge on a sliding scale, but also we are a donation-based organization. And so it's dear to our heart to talk about finances and just to be really honest about them. And we welcome you. We have nothing to lose in being really honest in this conversation. So we just welcome you to do that today. So that is a little bit about me. Marcus, you want to give a little rundown on you?
Hi, my name is Marcus. I am Malaysian by birth and nationality. I graduated from Crown College in 2015, met my wife, Lauren, over there at Crown, and we moved to Malaysia the day after we got married, served in a local church. My parents are pastors, and also did refugee advocacy and refugee kind of ministry, as well as some member care stuff for Alliance missionaries in Southeast Asia, in Europe, and also, yeah, we had a refugee live with us. So I am what I think would be considered a tent maker in this context. I graduated with a Bible theology and intercultural studies degree, but I do a lot of graphic and videography, kind of design, filming, and telling stories through visual arts. And then during the pandemic, I started a home bakery to kind of fund myself and the ministry that we were doing with refugees. And we just moved back in December. So transitioning during the pandemic is an interesting thing. So looking forward to engaging in conversation and kind of seeing what we can, how we can all learn from each other.
Thanks, Marcus. I am Herb Lamp, and this is my wife, Debbie. We've been involved in missions. I like to say we've been involved in missions since 1900 and none of your business, because we're quite old. Over 40 years, we've been Faith Promise supported. So it does work. People can raise funds and go to the mission field. We've been there for 40 years. It's hard to believe. First, we went behind the Iron Curtain for 10 years. You know what's happening over there right now. And then the last pretty much 30 years, been involved pioneering member care with our old organization, now with Barnabas International. So along with people like Larry Gardner and others, we were doing member care and we didn't know what we were doing. And so it's so great to be at a conference like this where people are learning both at a local level and also overseas. So that's about it, right?
Debbie, you want to add anything?
At some point, I wanted to say, I don't know if this is the right place to say it.
Maybe just intro, adding.
Raised three children overseas, and I guess that's it.
A lot more than that.
We wanted to talk about the ministry funding model and sort of the differences. It's on the bottom of your page there, because we might be coming at this quite differently. And so I just wanted to present that for the sake of having some common language. So some people would say donation-based. Everyone familiar with that? Raise your hand. You're familiar with donation-based funding. Keep your hand up if you've done donation-based funding for yourself. Okay, so like 75, 95, something, almost all of us have done some sort of full donation-based support. That's what we've lived on. This usually entails a combination of churches and individuals providing enough support for a salary for typically one ministry worker, if you're a married couple, right? Is that what we often hear? Not for both people. Sometimes it's both, but generally it's one, right, Debbie?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I was talking to her. I was asking, I've been wearing a mask. Is my beard all messed up?
No, you're good.
If I could say one thing to church ministry teams,
I would say keep that in mind when you support a missionary couple. You're getting two workers for one salary, and to really value the other. Sometimes it's the husband, but most of the time it's the wife of a couple that is the volunteer, but she's working just as hard as her husband. So value her and recognize her.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you know, if there's a way to promote people a salary too, it impact Social Security, it does impact, you know, long-term care, like it does impact every element of their retirement, and so actually giving both people a salary shouldn't be out of the question. So,
can I just say something to that? Because I just went on Social Security recently,
and back when we were in our 30s, we faced that question: should we split our salary? We could have, but we chose not to because we, for Social Security reasons, we would end up. It would be more of a benefit to have it in one salary rather than two split ones. Today, we are so glad we made that decision. We're living with the benefit of that right now.
Having not split.
Yeah.
Unless Social Security changes.
Yeah. So the second option is full organizational support. There are organizations that send people being fully funded. Raise your hand if that has been you or if you've experienced that. Not super common. All right. Yeah, good to know. Wouldn't that be lovely if it was common? Full church support, being sent out by a church that provides full funding for their workers. Raise your hand if that's you. Again, not super common or popular. All right.
People don't need this.
So. Yeah. So we're starting to see where the conversation's going to go here. A hybrid model, collecting a salary partially through donations or partially through tent making. Anybody done that? Yeah? Okay. Awesome. Yep. A few of us. And then tent making, being a full-time ministry worker but paid a full-time salary outside of ministry work, meaning that you also do a second full-time job. So... anybody? That'd be you? Yeah, you. All right. So it looks like the majority of us are here because full donation-based support is our most common denominator, right? Is that right? And there would be no problems at all to talk about with that, clearly. So, Herb, can you give us one or two things, having lived on support for as long as you have, that have been challenges for you?
Well, the first, if you see the first, I'm not sure if I'm speaking into this, right? Okay, great. The key questions, the first one says define fully funded missionary. You see that on the sheet? That is actually not a truthism. There is no thing such as a fully funded missionary. It is really, really hard to...
it's rare.
Yeah, to see funds come in fully. So... I think that's probably the number one thing is constantly working at support raising, and it's a constant thing. And I would also say, for people our age, which is people think, oh, you have it all together. You know, you've been in missions 40 years. Guess what? Our mission base, generally speaking, are older people who are living on fixed incomes or passing away, and we have a very hard time connecting to younger donors. It's just not easy. So there's a whole new challenge for older missionaries than the challenge for younger missionaries is getting your support. The challenge for older people is maintaining support because it's very hard. So just speaking from my perspective on that.
Yeah. Do you add anything, Marcus, to that?
Yeah, I guess from a millennial's perspective, church giving has trended down over the last 10 years. I think the clearest numbers were probably produced in 2010 to 2012 about global church giving, and then the projections for it now were semi-optimistic, but I think we're seeing that with church decline, church attendance declining in the U.S. and also in many other places, and the paradigm or the mindset about missions changing. From a millennial's perspective, it has been easier, I think, for me to think about how can I generate funds through projects, through looking for work, because it seems to be the same amount of workload if I were to be looking for funding. The same stress there applied to, well, if I find something that I can do with a service that I can provide, then I can secure that funding. So I guess from both end, that side and this side, just giving in general is trending down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would add, my husband and I have been support-based for 16 years, and we've been at about 80% funding for almost that whole time. So we've been underfunded, living with the stress of being 20% off. Even if we have a super, super tight budget, we almost always have lived at 80%. And so what does that mean? What does that look like? It looks like a really nice January, February, March, and we breathe a little bit. We go to conferences. We do fun things. You know, not really. But, yes, we do go to conferences in January, February, and March. In April, we start to taper off. By June, July, and August, when the general giving is low in the church, it's also really low for missionaries. Mm-hmm. So then in the fall, like we often have that dip, right? So then in the fall, we start to ramp up and we start to support raise really hard towards the end of the year, and we make it at the end of the year, but we have lived at about 60% during those summer months. usually, ongoing. So what does that mean for missionaries? Like, how do we care for them and their finances, especially when they're supposed to be traveling or doing furlough or doing other things in the summertime? I would say for us, we've traveled on like a zero budget, like not actually getting paid for several months. And that is just a super, super stressful place to be, and a really hard reality to have $4,000 tickets, you know, and then have go, oh gosh, we're raising support, you know, what are we doing buying these tickets? And, you know, it's just it's a very stressful pattern to keep living. And I'm talking about the problems right now, right? We're not actually getting to the solutions quite yet. So we're in agreement that it's a stressful place to live. We're in agreement. You all have lived it, right? Like, you all have been in that support raising place. So what do we do about it? What are some of the ways that the church can come alongside of missionaries in this place or global workers in this place? Who wants to go first on that one?
Yeah, sorry. We'll let you go.
So the question is, what can local church do to help missionaries financially while they're back traveling, or what?
Yeah, what can the local church do in response? So we know the problem. What part can the church play with the changing face of missions and with the need and the kind of the admitting we're not alone in this at being underfunded?
Right. No, most people, that's what I said. It's a misnomer to say fully funded. I think one thing you should realize, most of the support today comes from individuals, not from churches. You probably know that in your own support raising. Churches give, you may be fortunate from a large church. You may get a large percentage of your support from a church, missionaries do, but most get it from individuals. So churches need to be aware that we can't necessarily spend all our time at churches. We're also visiting our support base that are individuals. So, and the other thing is, I would just say in churches too, the scheduling in churches, you guys know this, you run churches, is very tight. Missionaries don't get much time in church. So I would look at opportunities to allow missionaries to present their ministry in a way that might not be, you know, you might give them 2 minutes in the morning service, but there's no evening services anymore, no prayer meetings, so get them into small groups or get them into Sunday school classes or get them into some kind of vehicle where they can at least share a little bit more their ministry, because 2 minutes in a morning service, usually you don't make an ask in a morning service, right? So that's not, you don't have an opportunity to present your needs too much, or even to just share or get to know people. So I always would say for churches, look for relationship building opportunities. And I know you do. I know churches do that. But that's a practical way just to allow people to at least be known a little bit in church.
I am not familiar with, I guess, the U.S. Side of local churches and supporting, but I can speak from a receiving end. Malaysia has been receiving missions since the Jesuits came, the Portuguese came, the British came, AOG, Assemblies of God, you know, all these different missionaries have and organizations have come to Malaysia. I think what we have observed is typically, you know, some of the stuff that churches organize from America to do missions overseas, we can do for ourselves. I think there's more conversation now perhaps than before, but things like, you know, building houses, building schools, there are needful activities or needful things to be done there, but the local people can do that. And so sometimes it's seen as, you know, so much money I know is going into short-term missions from churches, sending their youth a team or, you know, a group going out to do things. And it's a good way of getting people's dipping their toes in the water for young people to think about service and missions, but not often very beneficial, I think, in terms of spending dollars, mm-hmm. of how the money is utilized. And so perhaps that can be a conversation that is initiated in local churches here to think about how are we spending our missions dollars. I believe the figures back in
2011 and 2012 was that 0.00-something% is actually making it to, of money is actually making it to the most needful places and missions. Unreached, unengaged people groups are getting, you know, once you have that, everyone gets your slice and overhead and everything. The money that's actually making it onto the field and to the missionaries to do the activities and programs that they want to run is very minimal. Grateful for organizations like Finishing the Task and Go 2030, I think, and all these different groups that are looking at kind of Bible translation and that, but that's one part of the picture, right? Like, you have Bible translation done, you also still need people to teach. And so I guess that's kind of where I would say, coming from a local church in Malaysia, seeing, receiving missionaries in our own church, it's good to hear and to see what people are doing, but from our perspective, like, maybe a little more thought behind how the money is being spent would be good for everyone.
Yeah, and I appreciate, I asked Marcus to be a part of this panel because he's coming from the Malaysian perspective, and I think it's really important for us to be thinking not just the Americans going to the world, but the world going to the world, right? Like, that is where missiology is. That's the present-day globalization model of missiology. And so it's really important for us to hear from people that are not Americans to know. But you can't. Why don't you go ahead and talk to us right now about how you can fund yourself?
Right.
Do you mind?
Yeah, sure. So I was actually just talking to, I guess it also depends on the policy of the organization you're going with. I do know that some organizations are very strict with whether you can have other sources of income on the field. So definitely within organizations there are different policies and all of that. For us, what it looked like, my wife and I, so she graduated from Crown with a teaching degree, and then she was employed at a school. I was serving part-time at my parents' church, so we received a little stipend from there, but most of it was through finding a skill, learning a skill. Obviously, I didn't go to college for communications. I learned most of video editing, photography, graphic design, kind of on my own through YouTube and all of that. And there are many of these freelance websites, but also word-of-mouth connections are very, very good. I work mainly, or worked mainly before the pandemic, with missions organizations to do videos for workers in the field so they could use that for fundraising. So that was another thing that, you know, I would be reimbursed for, like, flights maybe, but not have, you know, a ton of money to take home or to be considered as support. But even that in itself, just finding these opportunities and then kind of growing out of the Christian circle, looking for projects. And so if you are in an organization, especially, I see a lot of young faces here too. Hello. If you are starting this journey of looking up, thinking about how you're going to fund yourself on the field, it is stressful, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be consuming. Of course, I'm sure Herb and Debbie will, and Sarah will, and everyone else here who has been in the field has stories about how God has provided, you know, fed by the ravens or manna from heaven, instances where the Lord has provided in those times. And there's an intimacy with Jesus that is cultivated in that, right? God is your provider. Even if it's through mission dollars from a church, He is the one who is still giving that to you, I guess, yeah. I would say to start conversations about, you know, we've heard this phrase, pray or give or go. For us, what that looked like was we were praying and giving and going. It seems to be the case that if more people would take up the mission, there would be less need to, you know, talk your mouth dry, trying to sell a pitch to someone to, you know, believe in what you're doing, especially like a church leadership or board or something, because I think the numbers are also somewhere between, like, it's a very cliche, I guess, a statement, but like, what, 90% of the work is done by 10%. I think it's actually less. Probably 2% of the workers do 98% of the work, right? So if we were able to have some form of paradigm shift from, you know, some people are called to pray, some people are called to give, some people are called to go. I think we're all called to go, right? That going to all the world is translated go into all the world, but is as you are going. Right? It's a intentional action of, doesn't mean that we have to go, you know, far away. And so coming back to funding though, picking up a skill is extremely important, I think, especially for younger ones. You know, every country now, I would say in Southeast Asia, they are looking for coders, they're looking for programmers, they're looking for people who can manage businesses online. These are good skills to have. And I used to think, you know, I want to follow Jesus. I don't want to do business. I don't want to think about money. Like, I just want to teach people about Jesus and disciple people and not necessarily have to think about where my money is going to come from. And for a long time, that was the mindset. But I think doing that kind of tent making has also opened doors for me to reach people, has extended that circle where I'm not just, you know, engaging with transient people like me, but actually meeting people who are in those places. Like if you read Tim Keller's Center Church, he talks about old city and new city, kind of like, you know, mega churches are starting in New York, but who are they reaching? They're reaching all these transient young people traveling from other parts of the world and from America to New York. But what about the people in the bodegas? What about the Italian families who've been there for ages, the Irish families? Like, are they reaching, impacting those people? And so you kind of have to broaden your circle a bit about who do I want to reach, how do I want to reach them, and then finance becomes part of that conversation. And then in that, for us, we have found that we've actually been able to meet with people that we wouldn't have met with if we were fully funded, right? We had to kind of do a little work on ourselves. And so I find that model to have worked for us. Is it stressful? Extremely. You know, we're living on one salary even right now, and America's extremely expensive. So it's kind of like, God, how are we going to do this? But, you know, in
it's
that
a big
sense,
step in itself.
Right, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we're all here.
Yeah, and you felt called, and you felt called in a different way to do this model differently. Yeah. So, and I do think it's really important for us to talk about the creative alternatives, right? What are the other options? I heard Marcus say, too, though, like word of mouth, let other people...
Right, you found out about... So,
yeah.
I spent 2 weeks with Sarah in Malaga, Spain.
Yeah.
Because a mutual friend of ours kind of put out the word that I was going to be in Spain, and we connected and we traded a place to stay for video work that
yep.
I did.
So we needed video work, you needed a place to stay, and we traded that, right? So then we didn't have to pay for the service that we needed that he could do. So the bartering option was there, and I do think word of mouth for the local church is a great option. Like, who are the people that can do the things that need to be done, right? So as a missionary, I have a list of needs, and there's a whole bunch of things that the local church can come alongside of me and do. Write thank you cards, send letters, introduce me to their friends, listen when we come back from the field, introduce us to a good dentist. Pay for the good dentist.
Have a dentist in the church for all those services.
Yeah, I really, if we're thinking creatively and outside of the box as the local church, like almost every service could be provided, right? That we each have something to give. And as I was thinking about this, that might be a listening ear, you know? When somebody comes back from the field, man, they just need, like, care. And so it could just be somebody to listen. That doesn't cost us anything, right? It might be staying in your house. It might be borrowing your car. It might be introducing them to somebody else who has those gifts or those talents. And so I think there shouldn't really be a finance issue, right? Like, if we were truly being the body of Christ, and not just for missionaries, but for each other. But we're talking about missionaries, so we'll keep it on that subject. But if we were really caring for missionaries in that way, we each could ask ourselves, like, what do I have to give? So when Marcus called and said, hey, you know, could I stay in your house? Do you need anything? And I was like, gosh, our list is long. Like, we have all kinds of stuff you could do for us. But at the same time, who is this guy? Like, we don't know him at all, but he came as a reference.
And so we said, sure, we'll figure it out, you know. And we hosted a lot of missionaries in our home for the purpose of member care, but we also had a basement we could do that. So we said, we don't even know what he's going to do. He can just stay with us. That's fine. So we had an open door. You're here because of it, right?
Yeah.
And we got a video out of it.
And good food
and fun, and you know, more of a familial relationship, mm-hmm. that my kids benefited from as well. And then he got to do what he was trying to do over in Europe, which was mm-hmm. a beautiful intersection. So were you going to add something?
I just have a couple other comments.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, you know, in scripture, koinonia is just the word that means common or fellowship, but it does have roots to goods and material goods. And so when the church shared everything in common, mm-hmm. that is exactly what you're sharing
yeah.
right now,
yeah.
Sarah. Just two things. For those of you who are looking at a future of missions, I will say after 40 years in working with, I was a personnel director for a large mission for many years too. Probably those of you who are not wanting to raise as much support as you can or go overseas shortcut, you won't make it. Frankly, you won't make it. You need financial stability. I'm sorry, but if you're only going over for 3 months, that's one thing. But if you're looking at a life, if you're looking to raise your family overseas, your children overseas, don't shortchange the support raising thing. I'll just say that, because I've seen that over and over again. The stress of lack of funds bring people home. And it's a shame. It's a real shame, because they invest so much of their effort and time raising whatever they do, going over, learning a language, trying to get there, and then not staying with it. And of course, there's obligations and responsibilities on that. You're not just asking for support, you're communicating and you're staying in touch with your donor base. It's a lot of work and it's ministry, but it's necessary. And if you don't have a support, financial support, it'll be difficult. I will also say for churches, for those who might be sending some of your workers over as BAM workers, businesses, mission workers, be aware that they probably need funds too. In fact, I will say they need funds. I know people who have started businesses so they can be in a country that's hard to get in outside of that, and frankly, all their money in the business is going back to the business. They're trying to keep the business afloat. They're hiring nationals to work for them. They don't even draw a salary. They need support to do that. So even if they're going over as a BAM worker, be aware that their finances are probably not adequate in what they're doing to support themselves in it too. So just don't think, oh, they don't need us. They're going over as a businessman or something. That's not true.
You'll often see missionaries dividing up their salary into like projects. So there's, you know, a college fund or a car fund or how, you know, they'll delineate it out so that, you know, people can give to a specific, they know what they're giving to. So when you see the tally at the bottom, it seems really high and really big, but it's the reality. So don't be scared. That's all I'm trying to, mm-hmm. one thing I'm trying to say is, don't be scared by saying, you know, what's the annual? It looks like a lot, but it's really covering a lot more than just, you know, what they have to pay their rent and buy their food. There's a lot of other things that go into that, too. Don't let that scare you. And the other thing that I would encourage for churches is to, some churches have a policy that if they are receiving money through from the church, then they don't allow those missionaries to raise funds from individuals. I don't know if that's still a policy in some churches. Has anyone else faced that? Mm-hmm. That they're prohibited from talking to individuals about giving to their church ministry. I would really like to kindly say, please let them. Let them talk to individuals also, on top of what you give them as a church. Mm-hmm. It's the people that really believe in them, that are going to support them, that are going to pray for them, mm-hmm. that are going to be there for them when they while they're overseas, communicate with them, mm-hmm. really be there for them. Yeah, those people are really important, not just that the church itself gives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and the personal relationships carry them through. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get back to you really quick. I would just add that all of us have a book downstairs, book table. And this is a shameless plug because we are all missionaries. But at the same time, when you buy directly from us, we don't give all of our money to Jeff Bezos. So I didn't know that before I published a book. And all of us have published books now. So if you buy directly from the missionary, it's going to go to the missionary, and it's going to keep them actually in their pocket.
My book just goes to my account to buy books so I can give to missionaries.
Yeah.
So I'm not even getting any money out of it.
Yeah.
I'm just turning it right over.
Which is fantastic as well. And ours goes to create more resources so that we can keep doing that. But it was amazing to me, just as it related to the BAM comment, it was amazing to me when I published it to find out that Amazon actually took 70% and we got 30%. So it's great to have the advertising and it's great to have the publication. But if you see the book tables, go and talk to those people and buy it directly from them, because that's actually going to help. It's a form of BAM for these people, a business's mission. So if you are a writer, start writing and use that as an opportunity to create a second income so that you can use that for commissions as well. So that's just a side note. You have one. Here's mine. That's the table downstairs. And do you have yours? No, Herb's down there as well. So, and then there was one other comment on that too, but I don't remember. So I'm going to go to you with the question. Go ahead.
I have a question. Now, what are your thoughts on what the leadership every time looks like as a missionary? Like, what are the ways to define it as far as, like, ministry, like, everything be religious?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because we all might answer that differently, right? Yeah. go ahead.
Well, first, there's a lot of dynamics to that question, okay? But let me just speak. First of all, you are a giver yourself, okay? You better be given to missions yourself. You also want to give to the local context, but you need to be wise in that. We lived in Yugoslavia and Serbia, and if I gave 10% of my income to that church, it wouldn't be a healthy thing for that church. So I had to look at other ways to give money out. I have to be aware of my Western influence within certain populations would not be good. They need to support their ministries, not because I'm there. And sometimes missionaries do that. They end up being the big money person, and that's not healthy for the church. So you need to be generous. I would start giving. I tell young missionaries all the time, give to missions. If you want to get from missions, give to it right now. Not if you want to. Just do it. That's the right thing to do. Secondly, I also say it's not at the school I taught at, for a Slavic school, all the students evaluated their professors on the car they drove, their spirituality of the car they drove. And if you had a lousy car, you were more spiritual than those with big. So there's a lot of dynamics with that. But I would say, please don't be afraid to care for your family and care for your kids. A lot of kids, I know my kids hate support raising, because it's like they have gone out, at least our son has gone out on missions, but it's like they have this bad taste in the mouth, because sometimes we've complained too much maybe about not having things and not providing for their family. So you don't want them to feel God is a stingy God. You don't want your kids to feel like they can't, you can't provide for them. So I don't think it's a sin to take them on a holiday. I don't think it's a sin to do certain things and have a lifestyle that allows them to have some things that other people want too. But, you know, reality does hit, and those are the things that generally get cut when you're in financial stress.
Debbie, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I headed up a ministry called Equipping Women International for 20 years, and one of the things I learned right away was the moms and the wives, they were the last ones to spend money on themselves. everybody else got you know, send the kid to camp, send the kid to college. So the money, so she never felt free to do much. Now maybe that's changing, I think, in this day and age, but keep that in mind. I would just say keep that in mind and make sure that everyone in the family is benefiting. If she wants to continue education, whatever she needs to do. I mean, I'm just speaking as a woman. There's other perspectives, but that's
very true. I just want to say one thing real quick. Often churches want to give to their missionaries a special gift. Be aware that if you give monetary, that may not go towards what you want them to give to. Some of my churches will give me an Amazon gift card.
They mention that.
Which I'm not sure I like either, because I'm really tied to Amazon then. And it's like, oh, I can't really go on a vacation or something. So it's a delicate balance. But if when my churches give me like a Christmas offering or something and they give me $300, it's like, okay, we'll use that to, you know, if not pay for a ministry, at least fix our car or something, which is needed, but it's not necessarily what the church wants to do. So just be aware of that in the church background.
Yeah. Well, also, as a self-funded person, you don't have someone breathing down your neck to tell you you can't go on a vacation. And you know,
you're here to represent.
Right. Yes. So if you want to go the fully funded model, as Herb was saying, you need the support. You have to build that network. On this side, you know, tent making alone is for me for two people at least. It seems, with one income that's stable and also tent making, it's possible. It's worked for us, and we got to go. I mean, during the pandemic, especially, things were much cheaper in country because of, you know, tourists were not coming in, so we got to go to do crazy things that I would have never thought that I would get to do. So, and no one was, nobody was like, oh, how are you spending your money? You know, that breathing down your neck part wasn't there.
Can I have a comment on that?
Yeah.
So we have a trusted donor in our life who we ask really directly, like, what do you think of this? Like, we just are like, what do you think of this? Somebody gave us tickets to Disneyland. Should we go? Like, we checked it, especially at the beginning. So we were checking it all the time. Like, does it look bad? We don't post it on social media because a lot of our donors wouldn't go to Disneyland. But somebody gave us tickets to Disneyland. So we were like, gosh, it's a huge gift. Thank you, you know? And so for us, it was stewardship to thank them and to go, and we didn't make a big deal about it, and our kids don't know that we're poor, like, because we've gotten to do some amazing things. But we check it with our donor that is a trusted source, and she's a CFO, and so we just say, hey, what do you think about this? Like, how does this sound? And I would say for every missionary who goes, like, if they could have somebody in their life they can be really honest with. When we moved back to Colorado, somebody gifted us like all this really nice apparel from Columbia and Land's End and all this really nice stuff. All of our stuff was in shipping for 6 months. So it snowed and we didn't have anything. And these friends worked, new friends, they worked for like Columbia or one of the big sporting goods store. And we were just joking with them, hey, do you get free stuff? And they said, we have a closet full of free stuff. And it fit every single person in our family, which was just like such a huge gift from God. And I turned to my missionary friend, I called her and I said, you know, gosh, I feel guilty wearing this stuff. And she said, everybody in Colorado wears that stuff. Like, you don't need to feel guilty. Yeah. And they gave it to you. Like, that was a huge gift. So I think it's stewardship between you and the Lord. Yeah. And then me and my husband talk about it every month. Like, we do our budget, we look at it every month, and then it's with us and one trusted donor. So if you can be that trusted person on a staff at a church or, like, on behalf of the church and be a listening ear for missionaries, I think that's really, really important. It keeps us in check, too, and not in the sense of, like, you know, looking down, looking over your shoulder, you know, always asking, but in a really trusted way. Yeah. And making sure that they have somebody as an outlet. So
I think it gives you permission.
Yeah.
That's what you mean by
yes.
Chat.
Yeah.
Gives you permission to spend money on yourself when you don't know if that's right.
And for especially important things, like, I actually think that financial care is the most easily preventative care for keeping missionaries on the field, quite honestly. I will just say that really boldly, because it allows people to actually get the other forms of care that they need as well. So we work in the counseling and coaching elements of care,
but people can't afford to go to those if they don't have their finances in place. And so finances are the most preventative form of keeping people on the field, or the best for attrition long term. So if you can think creatively, if you're on a team of people or if you're going yourself, think creatively about all of the list of things that you need. This is one of the things that we did and has now since helped us to be in the last 2 years at full support when we've needed it. To think through all the creative ways, and then we go, God, who are the people that you're asking to come alongside us in this? Like, four things that are really basic. And then he provides in these amazing ways with clothing or different things like that. So it's been really, I feel like the provision has come in being donation-based, but I also feel convicted that we need this other stream of finances as well. So yeah.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah, yeah. And you can send message questions to this. We're not going to get to answer them all. We're going to go just another 2 minutes or so. Yeah, so send it to this number, and we'll also inform us for the future of what's relevant for you. So if you have other ones, go ahead.
Yes.
I was going to ask, what if you have a financial partner, supporter, who has an idea for where they want their money to go, but it's just not realistic? Like, how are you still, like, respectful to them, but also, like, okay, that's not realistic, so that's probably not where the money would go to?
Can you be specific?
I don't have a specific example, but...
they want to control it, is what you're saying.
Yes, they want to control where their money's going.
Yeah.
It's just not like...
Yeah, it's not exactly going
to
work. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, well, ethically, I wouldn't accept it, okay? Because you can't guarantee... You can say, I cannot guarantee that money's going to be spent the way you want. So I don't feel I can accept it. If you are comfortable with knowing it may not go there, then maybe. I mean, that's the other question. A lot of missionaries who raise support, do they receive money from non-Christians, unbelievers? That's a big question.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't know that. Sarah, what are you doing in Malaga? But I personally think, you know, you need to say that. And missions will turn money, if the money that's given to them, because it doesn't go to you if you're in a faith-based mission. It goes to the organization designated for you. But you only get what your mission lets you. So missions... If that's in the case, if they're ethical mission, they will return the money back to the donor if they can't fulfill his wishes. So I would not accept the money. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, we've said no to people before as well. If they even give in a what are you doing with my money kind of way, or what, you know, like if they have an edginess about it. Mm-hmm. We just had a conversation with a family member in the last 2 months. And we said, we would appreciate you to really pray about whether or not we're the people you want to give your money to. It doesn't sound like this is a good fit right now. So it was a hard conversation to have, but at the same time, I've known a lot of missionaries who've done that, like, just really honest with them. So
yeah.
I would be really honest with people.
Yeah. So doing tent-making stuff, most of my projects are clearly stated as to where the money's going. So the people who want to give will give. People who don't want to get, you throw your net, and who you catch within the net is who you catch within the net. I want to go back to your question real quick. I come from a ministry family. My parents have been pastors for over 40 years. In their context, they have little to no boundaries. People call them at 3 in the morning. They're out counseling, doing all these different things. And so I grew up with that kind of ministry as like, you have to be fully self-sacrificial. And so whenever I would fly and I would hear the pilot say, or the video say, you know, if the oxygen levels drop, the masks come down, parents put it on yourself first before you put it on your kid, I used to think, like, that's so selfish, right? Like, of course you would do it for this person first. Jesus would do it for the person first, right? And then a few years ago, kind of light bulb clicked, like, you cannot take care of someone else. You cannot do the thing that you are so passionate about, that you know God is calling you to do, if you are not okay. In fact, it would be better to just go home, because these are real lives that you are interacting with. These are real people. They are people who have the image of God in them. And if we want to give them their best, we should also be working toward our best. And so that shift of perspective, like, I know a lot of people lament that self-care is a
it's such a trendy thing, but also what is self-care, right? So I was talking with someone from an alliance, the North Central District for the Christian Missionary Alliance, this week, and so we were talking about what self-care was for missionaries. And so, I mean, I do it, I know some of us do it too, but binging a whole Netflix series, like taking a day off, I'm just going to sit in front of TV, that's not self-care. Right. I mean, that's something, you know, you're it's entertainment, but that's not really caring for yourself. And sometimes, before Lori and I got married, I had a really well-paying position, contract position with a really big church here in Minnesota for a while. So that covered a lot of my expenses living in Asia. But before we got married, then we begin to see, okay, money's going to get tight. And then I just felt like I needed to go to Spain and walk this pilgrimage walk, the Camino. And we were thinking about it, like, it's a lot of money. You know, I got to buy tickets to Spain, got to go do this. Like, am I being irresponsible with this money? But as we talked about it, it just became apparent, like, I had been up to that point in a different country every month doing ministry for 6-7 years straight. I just needed to retreat back to that place and reconnect with why I was doing what I was doing. And we were getting married. If I wasn't right with myself and right with the Lord, you know, what would that imply for the next chapter of life? So bought the tickets, somehow, you know, it got covered through work, and also some people just gave so generously. And that's how I got to meet Sarah, and that's why I'm here today. So there are things that, you know, on the onset, it seems like this is going to be a big investment, right? So I'm going to squeeze every drop from it, like, as much as I could go participate in this pilgrimage walk like I did. But it was good for my soul. It was good for our marriage to start with that. And so one of the things that I try to do, and this is going to be a plug for something that I'm doing, which is a free resource, is we have really... in our community in Malaysia, one of the things we did was Lectio Divinas. I don't know how familiar you guys are with Lectio Divinas as a spiritual spiritual discipline and spiritual formation. But
my book.
Yeah,
it's in your book too. Yeah.
So we've started recording Lectio Divinas. This will be downstairs. You can open Spotify and scan the code. But it's read by Christians from all over the world. And it's free. It's 20 minutes to 25 minutes. You know, if you need that self-care, if you need that time to retreat, like, use a free resource. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the trip's going to be beneficial, take the trip. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add, I wanted to hear, I'm struggling because we have about 5 more minutes. I wanted to hear if you have one more thought on what people can do to care for missionaries and their finances, or not their finances, in a non-financial way during furlough or when they're back on sabbatical. Mm-hmm. So anything that you would say in just a sentence or two.
Okay, just be aware, this is not necessarily on furlough, but it's also, on furlough you can provide housing, a lot of people don't bring stuff back, so if they're coming back to Minnesota in the winter and they live in Indonesia, they may not want to bring, I mean, they may not think to bring their winter coat, let them get some winter coats, bikes for kids, those kind of things. You don't transport back and forth, so those basic needs you can meet as a church if you think about it, but think about it. The thing I would say, I'm in an age where my generation of missionaries are retiring. It costs a lot of money. It does cost money for them to relocate. We raised a lot of money to move overseas. It costs that much sometimes to move back. So be aware of that as a church, that they're going to have location costs. Also, if they're younger and they want to get another job, it takes a while to get a job, so they need some cost in between. So don't just cut them off because they get into the U.S. Talk to them about what their needs, financial needs are, because they may need some months. In fact, I tell people the worst time to make decisions is in transition, right? So you don't want to, and if they're forced by finances. And finance, you know, they come back, you guys are saying, this is crazy, inflation is like crazy in America. Just think of somebody who left 4 years ago, coming back, and expected cost of the gasoline or something, and now it's like, wow, I didn't expect it to be so expensive. They have no idea You have no idea what your financial situation is. So it's really stressful for them to be trying to do their budget when they don't really know what their budget's going to cost. So all those things are understanding ear for people to help people on that.
Yeah. What we have discovered with our experience, but also I think it's a common experience for people returning from living abroad for a while, especially in missions, is you get asked a lot of questions like, what is the one thing you miss? Right? And it's like, I lived my entire life there. Like, there were times that were really hard and times that were good to think about, to shoebox that experience. Right? And if you're going on the field and you've not been, I can tell you it's going to happen. People are going to ask you your three favorite things, and they're well-meaning, I think, within the capacity of someone who maybe hasn't traveled. That's how they can understand your experience. But on our side, if you are here, based here, to think through your questioning, I guess, your line of questioning, and how to phrase that and how to kind of help them unpack. Because every conversation that you have with someone returning home that either might rub you the wrong way or make you feel really convinced about a certain opinion could very well be that missionary processing trauma, right? Processing cultural transition. So every conversation almost counts, especially if they have to repeat themselves with the same three favorite things that they enjoy doing.
I thought it was the beaches.
Yeah. And they're clean, yes, right. But then someone in Bangladesh is like, yeah.
Really short. Encourage them to go to a debriefing or transition retreat or conference or whatever you want to call it. That's what I was going to say next. And volunteer to pay for it for them. It's really important for them to process what they've gone through. They will get stuck where they are.
Buy Herb's book for them.
Well, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about something like Sarah's program or others. Many good debriefing programs out there. Barnabas has one too, called Interlude. It really helps if they're coming back for good, especially. But even just coming back on, after 3 or 4 years or something, yeah. It's really important.
Yeah. One thing I want to make sure to not say is support them if they do come back to the U.S. long term, because a lot of missionaries really struggle if they're in that transition period and they're not working for the organization anymore. We asked people this time to support us for 6 more months. We didn't know exactly what we were going to be doing. We didn't know exactly who we were going to be with. But we said, can you stay with us through this process? And 100% stayed with us. And it was such a difference in our stability during that transition to be able to make big decisions. So I just want to say that. I want to add 2 more resources before you leave, too. Fullyfunded.org, even though it's a misnomer, it's a really great resource. They have a podcast, Mary Valone, Mike Kim. It's a ongoing cohort. If you don't have something like that, they are fantastic at thinking through how to be funded and talking about all these issues, including some of the ones that have come in that we're not going to get to. And it's all people that are like the missionaries of us who are fully donation-based. And so there's a fully funded academy, fullyfunded.org. And then David Oakes is another name to know in that world. I'm actually attending one of the cohorts right now because I have to double our support now that we're an organization. So I'm raising quite a significant number, much higher, which, as you're hearing, has not always been easy for us, and it is a huge step of faith. But they are giving some really great practical tips, and the accountability and asking for funds is really needed. So that's what that group has been super great for. They have both David Oakes and Mary Valone and the fullyfunded.org. They all have podcasts, so you can start there as a free resource just to hear, like, how do you build your network? How do you ask again? How do you ask again? Like, how do you come home? Like, so that one's a great one just to know about and to pass along. The other questions that we're not getting to, feel free to grab one of us, and we could do lunch with you as well. Feel free, you can get our emails. We can continue the conversation. Don't go it alone. If you are going or if you're thinking about going, it's a very shame-filled place for a lot of missionaries to talk about money. It's a very delicate place to talk about money. So be open. Have people in your life who are open about it, and be a person who's open
who's willing to talk about it, who's open to hearing about it. So don't let it be a place that the enemy uses. Let it be a place of grace and glory. So.
And God provides.
Amen.
He really
40
does.
Years.
He can be
have.
Negative, but he really does.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Grab us if you have any more questions. Sorry. Don't go
you
yet.
You want to say one more thing?
No, I was going to say fill out the form.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm glad you, because that's exactly what I was going to say. You'll hear this a lot, but don't wait till the end to fill out your evaluation sheet. You each have one in your thing, and we on the committee value those. We go over every one of them, so we like to hear back. It's important to us.
Was this helpful? What did you want more of? What did we miss?
Yeah.
All of that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
I have my card on my table down there, so if you have questions, grab my card.
Yeah. Thank you.